We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
The Burrows of Berea podcast.
Welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch. And folks, I have a very, very cool guest. This is somebody that I heard about, then I finally met at the Berean Bible Church Conference. This was a couple years ago, I think. And she is a friend of a lot of you who actually watch this and listen to this. It is my dear friend, Shan Morgan. Good morning, Shan.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. And it is so nice to see you there with your Arkansas shirt on and you got your cup of coffee on this brisk, cool Christmas morning. It's not Christmas Day, but in our Christmas season.
It is. Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
Yes, a lot of them you know, our friends Marchessa and Mike and Sue Green and the Curtis family and all of them that we all. So I have
Robin C. Irwin.
Yeah.
Zach.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of us here down in the bunker.
That's right. There's only 14 of you from what I understand.
Oh, we're growing. I will say we are growing.
Yeah. Definitely. I've noticed that. I've seen it grow throughout the country. It's been great.
It's been awesome to see.
Yes, absolutely. So I've asked you to come on because I want to hear your personal testimony that I want for myself and for our listeners to get to know you a little bit. So I'm going to ask you the same question that I ask everybody that comes on for a testimony episode. Can you tell me the earliest memory that you have of when you heard the name Jesus Christ?
I knew you were going to ask this, and I cannot come up with any specific, you know, moment in time. Jesus wasn't even a household name when I was a kid or growing up in my broken family. But I did have a lot of influences in my life. I had several aunts who loved the Lord, and they were very influential in taking me to church. And, you know, if I heard the name of Jesus, that's, I heard it from them. And, but I do recall one specific summer. I was probably about 10. I know I was older than 9 because my dad, suddenly died when I was 9 years old from a massive heart attack. And, so I know it was after that I was kind of at I don't know if it was a VBS or if it was just in children's church or what it was, that my memory's not quite, but I did become a believer in Christ at that point through that vacation Bible school or children's church sermon. And I think when I've thought about that over the years, I think I realize now as an adult looking back that since I had lost my daddy at such a young age, and I was a daddy's girl.
And right.
So, you know, I thought my dad was a professional fisherman when I was growing up.
Don't we all? We all think our dad are the great white hunters or the great white fishers, right?
Exactly. But, you know, I think I more or less was looking for a daddy, you know, And so I'm sure, you know, it was Jesus was presented to me as my father and a good father. And I think that's what drew me to him at that moment. Of course, by the work of the Holy Spirit, I believe, you know. Sure. that was my first real memory of something that happened in my life with Jesus that, you know, turned my life around or that saved me at that point.
Whenever you were, so did your aunts take you to church prior to the death of your father?
Not so much. Okay. Not so much. I mean, we lived in a small town here in Arkansas. And like I said, I came from a broken home. So we moved quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so I never had roots. I'll put it that way. I never had just really good foundational roots as far as family and immediate family. My mom came from a really hard life. She was one of 10 kids, and they were poorer than dirt, you know, to put it lightly. But so I never really had a stable upbringing. I didn't have the, you know, the Leave It to Beaver upbringing at all.
Right. Yeah.
At all. You know, it was pretty chaotic at times. But my aunts did, go to church with them. I had cousins, their kids were my same age. In fact, both of my aunts that were very influential in my life, their sons both became ministers and still in the ministry. And, you know, so I was always around church. I was always in and out of church with them at points in my life. If I was at their house, I went to church with them.
Right. So, yeah. So after the death of your father and you really begin to see, like you said, Jesus as your father, you mm-hmm. start to look to God in that way. And you said you were 9 when that took place, when that started.
When he passed away, I was 9. So it was sometime after that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely after he passed away. And, you know, like I said, I had a broken home at that time that my dad had died. My parents were separated and my mom was working 2 jobs. You know, we were left alone, really. I had an older sister at the time. She was 2.5 years older than me. We were left alone a lot. And
right. Kind of latchkey kids.
We were. You know, we were worse than latchkey. I don't even know if we had a lock on our door. You know, seriously. But funny story, I drove by my old house that we lived in when we were growing up, and we didn't live there long. Like I said, we kind of hopped around, and it was still literally still standing by a stick, basically, you know, 2x4 was holding it up. And so, you know, when you go back and you look at where you came from, those memories just start flooding back to your mind, and
yeah,
good or bad.
So now that you've been introduced to him, and it's through your aunts and knowing that your cousins will eventually get into ministry, take me from that moment. So do you believe that that is your salvation moment, or is there some time whenever it really started to click with you?
Yeah. I would say yes.
Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big.
That was my salvation moment, because that's the thing I remember and I go back to over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And but you know, salvation is a process. It's a progression. The work that Christ does in our life is a progression, experience wise. And so, you know, it was a roller coaster, you know, from that point up until where I think God has me now. But you know, like I said, I came from a broken family, but I was also an abused child. I was sexually abused as a child by people who were close to me in my family. And then people who weren't, people who I didn't even know. I mean, you know, I know it happened. I just don't recognize their faces or know their names or anything. Even a teacher. At one point.
My goodness.
Yeah. So,
and how old were you when this began?
From what I can remember, because the thing is, Rick, when you're abused as a child, your memories just become, you know, just a bunch of gobbledygook. You don't know where you started. You know, you almost don't even know where your life started. You know, it's so.
I have that in common with you. I've shared that in my testimony. I was sexually abused at the age of 5, and then again at the age of 10. And so, well, actually, end of my age 9. So I know that. I know exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, the only reason that I can know the ages is because I remember where I was and in relationship to school. And so that's how I was able to pinpoint it. But yeah, once that opens up, a lot of people who have never been abused don't understand when our sexuality was opened up at such a young age, it created this nightmare scenario of us trying to navigate the world because we didn't know why we were having these weird feelings and what was going on. And we were, you know, for me, just acting out, maybe trying to touch a girl or something at school, I would get in trouble. But mm-hmm. I was really just living out this experience that had been happening to me, and no one obviously was recognizing that. And so, so for you, this was happening, I'm assuming, by males.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And you know, the thing about it is, it happened repeatedly, and people say, well, why didn't you tell someone? Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the common question. Why didn't you say something? And these are people you trusted. These are people who are loved by the people that love you. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so that's not an easy, there's never an easy answer to that question. Mm-hmm. And then I think as time goes on, especially as you get a little older, like I did, just the shame of it all, you know, it really does, you know, it holds you back from anything that in good that you want to do in your life. And so, you know, I mean, honestly, I never expected to talk about this, but I guess God had other plans and here we are.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not something I think about constantly or that I've ever like, oh, well, I want to, you know, write a book or help other people who have gone through this similar thing. But there are times when God's used my testimony, you know, in a personal way to some individual. And I know that it has helped them. I think the shame part is one of the biggest common things that we have is that you feel like you've done something, you know, maybe you deserve that, you know, because I think as kids, you know, we know how mischief we are. We know how bad we are. We know how, you know, disobedient we are. So in our minds, we're like, well, I must have done something then cause that. Excuse me, when that's not the case at all. And it never is the case. Never. So, you know, that that part of my childhood, you know, it's like it's blocked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost
compartmentalized
like,
it. That's what we do to protect ourselves.
Yeah, you do. You block out certain aspects of your childhood. And because you do that, then that just that carries over to other blocks of your life
mm-hmm.
that you look at, or I look at and I think, who was that person? You know?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Who is that? And
did you notice as you got older, how that compartmentalized part of your life was affecting other relationships in your life?
Sure. Oh, sure. Always. Mm. Marriage.
Yes.
Relationship with my kids. And I tell you, for me, and I know every situation is different. Everybody processes this and regains themselves back different ways. But for me, it was when I had my children, when I had my girls. It was almost, it was like, okay, this is the point you have to deal with this. This is... Right. This is the time that you've got to deal with the things that the shame, the guilt, it was just easier to lie about my life than it was to tell the truth about it for some reason, you know. But I think it goes back to shame. It goes back to you don't want someone that you tell to accuse you of anything. So it's easier just not to say anything. I found
that I could, like when you mentioned lying, it really resounded with me because that was something that I was doing as well. I was trying to misdirect and to keep people from looking at what the truth was usually. Cause I grew up dirt poor too. We didn't,
You're hiding that.
And then also when you take that with the sexual abuse and the verbal abuse and the physical abuse and all of the things that came on top of that, you definitely didn't want people to know that about your situation. You want people to look at you and respect you, but you don't even respect yourself. You don't respect the situation you're in. It is a nightmare scenario. Exactly. And then to have God introduced for me as a child, you know, wanting the love of Jesus was such a critical thing for me that, you know, I latched onto it. And then it was later in life when I started looking at the sovereignty of God that really threw me for a loop because I was like, okay, so wait a minute. So you love me, but yet all of this happened to me. Now, how does this work? You know, like, did you ever go through any of that?
Oh yeah. But I will say, I've always
bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
I didn't know it was the sovereignty of God. I didn't put a word to it but I've always in my life, for some reason, felt like God's grace was always there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, you know, I went through a lot of counseling. Sometimes, you know, that helps. Sometimes it makes it worse. Just depends on the counselor and how their approach is. But I had, I don't know if he was a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but anyway, I had to take a test. I don't know if you've ever been to a psychologist where you have to take, you know, you have to take a test, and it's really geared toward people who have been sexually abused as children. And so I can't even tell you what the questions were, but, you know, I answered the questions and I decided I'm going to answer these honestly, you know. I'm going to answer this honestly. And so the next session when I went back, you know, he looked at me and he said, you know, I don't see many women who come out of what you came out of who aren't prostitutes on the street right now or who haven't been that. And I'm telling you, that hit me. I'll never forget that. And I walked out of there and I just thank God, you know.
Yeah.
That was my moment where I just thank God that, thank you for protecting me in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And
out of curiosity, when you said that, do you have a heart for those women that actually went into prostitution or were in that? You know, most likely they were abused. And most.
Oh, no doubt.
And
no
so
doubt.
Like, no judgment for me, man. Like when I see there, you're not going to see an ounce of judgment for me in the lifestyle that they chose or whatever it is that was chose for them. I can see how easily that could happen to just anyone. Just like you said, from yourself, family, people that you love and that loved you, that, you know, were loved by the people that love you. These are the people that are the cause that this psychologist or psychiatrist would have said most people would have went into prostitution because of this. So that's why whenever I see people like that, like, oh, my heart just breaks for them and I just want to love them, you know?
Oh yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Prostitution, drugs, you know, whatever you want to call, you know, whatever you see, you know that there's such a brokenness behind all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it is, a lot of it is from sexual abuse, physical abuse or mental abuse, you know, some type of abuse in their childhood.
Yes.
You know, I have a dear nephew, my sister's son, who the same situation, you know, he was molested as a child and got into drugs, alcohol, you know, went to prison and, you know, and I know it's nothing but the grace of God that kept me away from that and out of that. And, and so the sovereignty of God is to me that, you know, basically God can do whatever he wants to do and he will do what, but it's the purpose is to bring him glory in our, in his, you know, and, so I
it almost sounds weird to say it that way, doesn't it?
It
sounds weird to say that. Like when I've spoken to people, and yes, I went through cognitive behavioral therapy. It was a secular version, and I told everybody it saved my life. I believe that was ordained by God for me to go through that, and I did. But to say things like you just said is by the grace of God. Now let's say it in a sentence because it's going to sound weird. By the grace of God, I had been molested and then came through. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait a minute.
Right.
Say that, right?
Right.
It's difficult to say it with your mouth, but once you've experienced it and you've come through and you see the good on the other side of it, it is mind-blowing, but it's possible. And by the Spirit, we see
it.
It is a very bizarre thing, but I can attest to this. Yes.
Right.
Some evil came upon me, but God turned it into my good, and that happened.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I don't dwell on that, of course.
Sure.
You know, it's not something, you know, I think about constantly. I talk about, you know, if anything, I probably don't talk about it enough. You know, and then I feel a little guilty for not sharing because I know that it could probably help someone else who's been through the same thing and pull them closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just, I'm just kind of, you know, I have a full life.
Of course, there's more to it than, I mean, obviously we're not going to just stay here in your testimony, but it does shape you. It happened early on. It's going to affect some of the choices that you're going to make later in life. That is for sure. So it's good to get that on the ground. And those of us who have been abused, we understand it better after through years, whether it's through therapy or just life experience or whatever, we have the ability to possibly talk and help and coach somebody through a similar situation or help other people prevent being in those kinds of situations because of what we know. But that isn't the whole of who we are. It's a part of who we are.
Exactly. And, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not something I dwell on. There are moments when I'll think about it, something will come up and, but I feel like, you know, that's just kind of part of my life where I've dealt with it and I've moved on. And, so Just like with other things, you know, when you go through a divorce, you have to deal with all the emotions, the, you know, everything that goes with that, with your children, helping your children. And you face it and you deal with it and then you move on. God moves you on.
So did you go through a divorce?
I did.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah, so did I. I had, oh, and by the way, if you hear any noises, Shan told us that she's having work done on her home. And so it's quite possible you'll hear some noise, but just ignore it like we're going to.
Yeah, so, they just pulled up. So yeah. You never know. Maybe the loud part got over with yesterday.
And maybe so. So let's just talk about that for a minute, just out of curiosity. So you get married. Is this when you have your children, is in your first marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you have two children?
I do. I had two daughters. Mm-hmm. And my first marriage, my daughter's dad, we were married and he was a preacher's kid. And, you know, his dad, my girls were saved. His dad was the preacher. My girls were saved in the church. They were baptized by him and a lovely family, just a wonderful family. And they're both gone. But even after we were divorced, you know, we were still so close. I was so close to them. And they, you know, they loved me even after, you know, I wasn't their daughter-in-law anymore.
Yes. And it's nice whenever people can actually do that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, so anyway, I raised my girls basically as a single mom. And I mean, he was in the picture, no doubt, but they still lived with me and, you know, I took care of everything and ran them to school and activities and, you know, just the usual things, working a full-time job. And then
was church a part of your life after the divorce?
Yes. Yes. Always a part of my life. And my children's lives. But funny story that I'd kind of like to talk about. This was before my first husband and I got married. I dated my husband that passed away after I met you at the Berean Conference. We dated before we had ever gotten married. And we went out several times and you know, I met him at church, really through a relative of mine. And so he was actually my Sunday school teacher, you know.
Oh, wow.
We did music together. You know, we just had a great time together. Went to concerts together, fairs. And he was about 6 years older than me. I was 20 at the time and he was 26. Mm-hmm. And so we dated and I always told him, I said, "You broke my heart." And he was like, "No, you broke my heart." I'm like, no, I think it was the other way around. But anyway, long story short, we actually did not get together in the sense that married or anything. But after I divorced and after he divorced years later, our children are adults, you know, he had four kids. And of course, I had two daughters, and God just brought us back together 30 something years later.
Yeah, and that's precious.
It is. He was raising at the time two grandkids. And so we got back together and dated for about 5 years before he asked me to marry him. And I was like, oh.
You know? Right. Do I want to do this again?
I don't know. No, it was really neat the way God, you know, brought us back together again as a family. And we were always in each other's lives, even when we were married to our first spouses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all went to church together, sang at my wedding.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He sang and played the piano at my wedding, you know.
Well, just so you know, so, I don't know if you know this or not, but I actually, my wife, Holly, I performed her first wedding. I was there. Yeah, I mean, that if that isn't as weird as it can get, I mean, that's
I
weird.
know. Yeah. Well, you know, we always
Never
joke.
expected that.
Nope. We always joke, says we're this big, weird, wonderful family. Well, the funny thing is that when he was raising his two grandkids, they were, when he got them on his 50th birthday, they were 2 and 5. And so his wife had already left the home, and his mother-in-law moves in with him. So his wife's mother moves in with him to help raise the kids. You know, she'd stay
Wow.
during the week because he's still a full-time, you know, had a business and was working full-time and needed help. And so when we started dating, his mother-in-law was living with him. His ex-mother-in-law was living with him.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is weird. He's
Yeah.
like,
We all think things are weird, but you can't. I tell you what, when people like his mother-in-law loved his children, with their grandparents, and was there to help. And you know, it's even though it's weird, it's like you can't do away with love, man. When love is there, you gotta take it where you can get
yeah. And
it.
here's another funny thing about all of that is he had no biological children, my husband. When he married his first wife, she already had 4 children.
Wow.
And so he had no, and he didn't get married until he was 40 years old, you know. So he had no biological children. Funny thing is, we are actually distant cousins.
Really?
We have the same great great grandmother. His great great grandmother had was married and had 2 children, and her husband died. My great great grandfather was married. He had 2 children. His wife died. They got together. They had 2 children together. So his great grandparents grew up as half siblings with my great grandparents.
Wow. Small
I know.
world down there in
So
Arkansas.
the funny thing is, he had no biological children, but he has biological grandkids, my grandkids. Only in Arkansaw, Rick.
That's
Only in
right.
Arkansaw.
I don't know. We do pretty good here in the mountains of Western North
Well,
Carolina.
yes, I think y'all probably give us a run for our money in that
My wife
department.
says we don't call it a family tree, we call it a family wreath. She said it goes in a big circle and we're all somehow intertwined. So
Exactly.
that
Exactly. You know, his children, his oldest daughter babysat my girls when they were younger, you know. So
Wow.
there was always a connection, you know.
Yes.
And then we had a lovely wedding on the beach with all of our kids and our grandkids in 2013. And we said we always said we're this big, weird, wonderful family, and somehow it just all worked and still works, you know,
Yeah.
even with him gone. It still all works.
I'm
And
very curious about something. So you said he was your Sunday school teacher at one time. You all went to the same church. Now, knowing what I know about where we all land, where we both land eschatologically, I know that probably wasn't the case way back when, right? So
Oh,
something transpires, and I'm very curious if it was you or if it was Steve and how all this got introduced to you.
well, it was definitely him.
Okay.
He after he went through his divorce, of course, you know, he was always a big studier. You know, he loved the Word of God. And we had a mutual friend that in our town, and he had come by to see Steve, just checking on him, you know, hey guy, hey friend, how you doing, and anything I can do for you. I don't know, you may have met him. He was at the Arkansas Eschatology Conference. His name's Mark Wiley.
I did. Yeah, I met him. I met Mark.
Yeah, good friend of ours. And so Mark just didn't say anything, but he just leaves a little hokey looking track on Steve's table. And I think it was a John Bray track. I'm pretty sure it was a John Bray. And Steve
For
picks
those
it
of you
up.
guys who don't know, John Bray wrote Matthew 24 Fulfilled. It's one of my favorite
Yes.
books.
Yeah, mine
He was from
too.
Georgia. He was a Southern Baptist preacher.
And he has ties to Magnolia, actually, where
Does
I
he?
was. And so anyway, Yeah, he picked it up and he read this little track and he's like, what is this? And so that just kind of started it. You know, he and Mark had a few conversations and somehow, and this was in, we started dating again in 08. And somehow this was like around the end of 07, maybe the beginning of 08, because we kind of started dating in August of 08. And so Mark, and I had kind of gotten wind that Mark believe something weird, you know,
yes,
second coming, is we, you know, small town, and I'm like, you know, whatever. I mean, I respect him. I'm not gonna, you know, say anything bad about Mark, but, and then when we, when Steve and I started dating, you know, basically our Fridays were spent talking and watching a movie or reading the Bible together. You know, studying the Bible together. And, you know, he would kind of drop little hints about, well, what if I told you that, you know, Jesus has already come back? And I was, you know, I was like, okay, tell me more about that. And so, you know, we got into some really good conversations and opened the Word of God. And he kind of threw out, you know, a lot of the time statements to me. And I mean, that was just totally foreign to me. I had never, never heard anything like that. But I will say, I wasn't like really into eschatology or anything like that. I just never, it just never really crossed my mind to study that. The Book of Revelations was like, just, you know, keep it over there.
That's know? Right. Yes, absolutely. Same here.
Just stay over there in that corner and I'll be fine. So, you know, I never really gave eschatology much thought. Now, of course, we went to a dispensationalist church, but I didn't know the words, what they were called, you know. I watched the Left Behind movies and, you know, I don't know, maybe I never read books about eschatology. I would just see a movie or something. But yeah, that was how we were both introduced to eschatology, him through Mark Wiley and me, of course, through him. And then we started listening to David Curtis, Berean Bible. And this was, like I said, like in around 08, 09. And, you know, this was when I don't even think it was video. I think it was still just audio from what I remember. And it was always a week later. Remember that? I don't know if you were.
I wasn't around in those early days.
Oh, you were? Okay. No. You weren't. You didn't go back that far.
No.
Yeah, it was a week later. So. What you were listening to that week was actually recording the previous week. And so, you know, that was our Sunday morning. That's what we did on Sunday morning. And I'll never forget, we were at the beach. We decided to kind of take our whole family, our kids and grandkids that we had at the time. We just decided, let's just see how this is going to work, you know, with everybody together. And so we decided to take them all to the beach. And so we did that. And we were sitting on the balcony one morning. And I was drinking my coffee and he was having this Diet Coke. And, you know, again, these conversations would just come up randomly. And I would say, for some reason, one day I just in my mind thought, well, what about Israel? I was like, so what's going to happen to Israel? And he was like, God's done with them. You know, they're no different than they're just a nation like any other nation. And God's done with them. And you know, they have to come into the kingdom just like everyone else does through Christ, belief in Christ. And I was like, because I was so hung up on what about Israel? What's going to happen to them? Because, you know, in my mind, they were it, you know.
Especially since, you know, from 1948 up to the present, you know, it's the timeline, you know, obviously we're 80 plus years away now, but or almost 280, I'll say. But you can only imagine from 1948 to 1988. I remember all of that stuff. And then up to 98, like those 40 or 50 years, it was a big deal. Great planet Earth. And like you said, and so of course it would come to the forefront of our mind. We were taught how important Israel was to the story. The fact, you know, can a nation be born in a day? And they're going to like, yes, it did. It happened in 1948. And so it just fit right into the narrative that we were being taught, you know? And so of course we were concerned. I had ministers standing up there saying, if you don't take care of Israel, if you don't bless Israel, God's going to curse you. I mean, that's, I was told that all the time. So I was like, all right, I guess I better be helping Israel somehow. And I wasn't doing anything. I was just going to church and saying they were okay. But to hear that they're just like any other nation. Whoa, that was a big deal. I was hung up on that for a while too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was, you know, that was a big thing for me because, you know, they were God's holy people. They were the apple of God's eye. They were the one who was going, God was going to rebuild his physical kingdom through. And of course, in my mind, you know, I could say all that, but I really didn't. I mean, it wasn't like it meant that much to me. You know, it wasn't like I was out there, you know, campaigning for Israel or anything like that.
Right.
But, you know, I would get these from, you know, get that from just preachers, you know, pounding it in you and that kind of thing. And, you know, and I always went to a, what I consider a dispensational church. But, you know, as I've learned more and I've studied more myself and I see more of the covenantal, you know, aspect of eschatology. And thank God for people like you and David Curtis and Zach and just so many people that have really helped my understanding and things along those lines. We did a Bible study in our home. We probably started it around 2016, I believe, 15 or 16. And my husband would, Steve would put these little notes and write these little things on Facebook. And he was a wonderful writer. And he, you know, he was such a great communicator with his thoughts and what God was showing him. And so he would put those things out there. And nothing too over the top dispensational or anything, but just things to kind of make you start wondering, what do you mean? You know, I'd like to hear more about that. And so we started a Bible study in our home. And it was funny because there were times when we had more people in our Bible study than David Curtis had in his church on Sunday morning.
Wow.
You know, we kind of laughed about that. But God just really used that Bible study for me, especially, I think. I mean, I was just, and I still have those Facebook, I videoed it and we would do it on a Facebook group page, a private page. And I still have those teachings that he did. And oh my goodness, they're just precious to me.
Boy, I would love to see those. I would love to see those.
They are. They're just precious. And I go back and I'll listen. I need to find a way to get them off of there because I don't ever want to lose them. And I'm not a big Facebook person.
I can help you get those. I'll absolutely help you get them and we'll get them. So that you'll have them. Let's do that.
And it was, you know, it was kind of my husband, he would start with just something small, you know, like time statements or just something like that. And, you know, just things that would make you pique your curiosity. And I mean, before when it was all said and done, we were, before he passed away, we had started the book of Hebrew, and it was just so, it was so refreshing and such a wonderful thing to see people's, you know, their whole understanding light up, you know, and so, you know, God just really used that time to really help people see the ones that he brought into our home, to help them see the fulfilled eschatology.
That's, yeah, the book of Hebrews.
It's all over the Bible.
It is. In the book of Hebrews, I started a study on the Burroughs called It's Time to Grow Up.
Yes, I remember that.
And it never finishes.
I was so excited. I was like, oh, yay.
And just so you know,
material.
So we're, yeah, well, fortunately, Zach Davis did a great study on it. And so everybody can go see Zach's. We even tried to bring in Zach's teaching and talk about it. And I discovered really quickly in the Burroughs, if you've got a futurist view, you can't understand Hebrews in the light that we're looking at it from.
Right.
When a very, very little while he will, you know.
Wow. And here's the thing.
Not delay. I think
you can only understand Hebrews if you view it from a fulfilled eschatology perspective. I wrestled with the book of Hebrews all my life that I was interested in trying to understand it. And I would read Hebrews. I was just like, what in the world? I mean, it was like you're just bouncing all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I think I've told someone this before. I'm like, you know, every time someone gets saved, we want to point them to the book of John. And I'm like, we need to be pointing them to the book of Hebrews. Because yes, if you understand the book of Hebrews and the covenantal change that's taking place there, you that's just the whole Bible.
It really is. I heard, now there's a guy by the name of James White, and he's not a preterist, but he said something that really resounded with me. He said, if you read the book of Hebrews, it sounds a lot like Luke, like Acts and the book of Luke, but the doctrine sounds a lot like Paul. And he said, so some believe that it was Luke taking down notes of a sermon that Paul gave, most likely the one that he did when Eutychus fell three stories down and died. But it was a long,
yeah.
But if you think about it that way, it's really interesting, because if anybody had an understanding as a Pharisee, it was Paul. And so when I read the book of Hebrews, it's like I hear Paul's voice preaching to a congregation in a home somewhere and telling them, look, all of these guys that are around you that are trying to get you to come back to Judaism, you cannot neglect this great salvation that we have. We cannot go back to that. This is about to vanish away. It's becoming obsolete. It's the end. And he talks about going through the hardships of these men in faith when you get to Hebrews 11 and all this, like, it makes so much sense from a fulfilled view. It totally does. It opens up. And that's why I called it It's Time to Grow Up. Like, hey, let's actually look at this for what it says and put it in its proper context. But I couldn't do it. It was ripping their minds out. They just couldn't handle it. So I'll go back to it again myself and probably finish the study. Zach did a wonderful, marvelous job. But you're right. If we're going to point somebody to something, the book of Hebrews is who we should point them to.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it just really explains so much. And I mean, you do have to really dig deep when you study the book of Hebrews. One thing that, and I'm trying to think, let me see. There was a...
For those of you who can't see her and you're listening, Shan is actually turning in her physical Bible so that she can tell us something, which is great.
Well, like I said, Hebrews is just, it's just full of so much richness. And where Paul talks about, you know, I want to explain all of this stuff to you, but, you know, you're not grown up enough, you know. Mm-hmm. You're still in kindergarten and you need to be graduated by now.
It's
time to grow up. Exactly.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, that resonates with me, because I literally have felt like all my spiritual life, my Christian life, I've just stayed in kindergarten the whole time.
Me too.
And And so there's a verse in here. He says, talking about, well, he's talking about, you know, how he's wanting to tell them about Jesus as the high priest after the order of Melchizedek. And he's saying, you know, I want to tell you more about this, but it's hard to explain since you've become dull of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talk about practical application in the Bible as a preterist. You know, sometimes we get so caught up in trying to understand it and trying to figure it out that we forget about the
how to live.
How to live through it and
yes.
by it. And so, you know, that dull of hearing, it's a Greek word, and I'm probably going to mess it up. I think it's called nothros or something like that. And it basically means you're not pushing yourself to try and understand, you know, you're not pushing yourself enough mentally to try and understand this. And so this past year, that was just that just resonated with me in my own personal life is you need to push yourself harder in the Word of God. I need to really buckle down and get serious about understanding the Word of God, because I think we can understand the Word of God. I think we can connect those dots that seem to be, you know, so far apart from each other, that because that's how I was as a Christian all my life. Like, well, you know, I'll just let someone else figure it out.
Yeah. We're the kind, like I used to say, like I'm the kind that kept the pews warm. I would sit there and warm those pews and let everybody else tell me what I needed to believe instead of setting it for myself and then believing it because I've read it and understand it and the Lord's shown me. No. Right. Yeah. Those days are over. I'm not warming pews anymore.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not either. I'm warming a recliner every Sunday.
So I'm very curious, Shan. Your husband, Steve, I know I learned just how important he was to David Curtis, just because David spoke about him at length while he was sick.
Yeah.
And so I'm very curious for you what it's like to go through having someone that you love so much that you've had this long history with over time. And then I'm not trying to go like all Barbara Walters sad on you here, but I'm just I'm genuinely very curious.
Yeah.
What is that like to be with someone that is going through that, knowing what we know about the Lord and understanding, you know, that this is natural and this is what happens, but talk to me a little bit about that. What that was like for you, because you both have a fulfilled view. You understand what we have. And wondering about what is beyond here, you know, beyond this life, you know, talk to me a little bit about that. What was that like for you?
Well, it brings me an immense amount of peace, you know, in my life. And it did in his life too, when he was here, just that fulfilled eschatology, understanding, it really, you know, the hope that we had has already arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And when this life is over, we're face to face with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he believed the Word of God with all of his heart. You know, he had faith in this gospel and the fulfilled view of that it's all been accomplished, and so he knew immediately when he died he was going to go to be with the Lord, and that was the peace, you know, that he had, and that I had too. You know, Steve was a unique person, and very loving, generous, caring. You know, David Curtis was one of his dear friends, And we never, I mean, we went years before we even met David and Kathy. And they just had this bond, this friendship, you know, that was so beautiful to see and to watch. And Steve would, you know, would call David on many, many occasions, you know, all the time, and say, what about this? Well, what about this? You know,
right. Of course.
And I'm sure you've done the same thing.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, and so, you know, they had a wonderful friendship, and it literally broke David's heart. And when he got sick, and they came to our home, and they just, you know, Dave and Kathy and Rob and Cindy, some other dear friends that live here in Arkansas, and they came to our homes when he was sick, and they just showered us with their love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just such a blessing to us and to me to see that he just literally loved David Curtis, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know what? I do too. I have grown so fond of David and Kathy Curtis. I love them with my whole heart, and nothing will change that. And
no,
the heartache that they've been through this year. And as you know, and I love them so much, and I feel for them so much. And I know that if I was hurting, or you were hurting, or whatever, they would be there for us. And that's what they do. And
no doubt they have been, you know, you know, people are always like, where do you go to church? I'm like, well, I home church. And they're like, that's kind of weird. But I'm like, oh, I have the most wonderful pastors. Mm-hmm. You know, I have the most wonderful pastors who are friends, who would be there for me at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
And they were, and still are. But the grief part, you know, I know you've had a lot of loss in your life here recently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I lost my sister a month before Steve passed away, my older sister. And then Steve passed away a month after that. And so, you know, it was just, it hit me, you know, pretty hard there. And, but there's a lot of things that grief can do. It can sidetrack you for one thing. It can derail your whole day to day, you know, just getting up and trying to maneuver your life without someone there. That's just hard in and of itself. But then you know, there's so many things that you know they're not you're not getting to experience with them. And you know, we've had grandkids and great grandkids since Steve's been gone, and the 4 years, almost 4 years that he's been gone, and just all those things. And, you know, our family is unique in the sense that we're still a blended family, even though he's not here.
Mm-hmm.
He was the thing that blended us all together, you know?
Right.
But even though he's still not here, we're still just a beautiful, weird, wonderful family that love each other dearly.
Mm-hmm.
So we rejoice when there's, and we include his memory every chance we can, in just our day-to-day lives, the things that we do, in marriages and new grandbabies and, you know, so.
Well, I think that it's, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it is hard not having someone that was so powerful in our family. And I mean that in a good way, you know, he was such a presence in our family. You know, everybody would be like, well, what would Pop do? Well, what would Pop say? You know, what would Pop think? You know,
right.
And he was just a good, he was a good grandfather. He was a great father, wonderful husband. He was a spiritual leader in our family. Even our kids who didn't, who don't believe, you know, who may not be full preterists, but, you know, they see they see a lot of things that he believed, and they understand in certain ways what he believed. Funny story, he actually sat down with our son-in-law's friends, who were mostly pastors, and I would say probably from the Reformed partial preterist camp. And he said, guys, just let me have 30 minutes of your time, you know. And so he laid it all out, you know, everything he believed, everything he saw, he laid it all out. And they looked at him and said, you know, I see that. I can see all of that, and this would change everything. And
that's right.
It would. But
and it does.
It does. It does change everything. You know.
So where does that leave you as we're about to close out this testimony? What are you doing now? What you got going on? I plan on coming and seeing you very soon.
I want you to. Mm-hmm. I would love it. Rick, life is full, and it always will be. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad for that. I'm grateful to God for that. We have 18 grandkids. And
that'll keep you busy.
Four great-grandkids, another one on the way. Mm. And the, you know, I've kind of, since Steve has passed away, I've left Magnolia, where we lived, where we both raised our kids. And I've left Magnolia. I moved to our cabin that we were going to move to and settle down at anyway, at some point. And my girls live in the central part of Arkansas. And so they're in the throes of raising their kids, and they're like, Mom, we need you. So I'm blessed in the sense that I could just get up and leave and move here, help my girls, be close to my grandkids. And Steve has a son that lives 40 miles north of me, and they have 6 children. And so I just get to enjoy my kids and my grandkids. And everybody's like, where in the world is Nanny? Because I'm just everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm everywhere.
Nanny on the move.
I'm a nanny on the move. And that's, you know, that was our life when, you know, when Steve was here with me. And that was our life. We were just on the move constantly. Mm-hmm. So, and it's been great, you know. Wow. And then God is, you know, God's led me to people like Rob and Cindy, who are dear, Irwin, who live here, who are dear friends, Marchessa, mm-hmm. who is a dear friend of mine. You know, he's just given me so many friendships that I know that, you know, I will cherish forever until God calls me home.
Yeah, that's one of the things about this community that I've discovered is that this distance means nothing. We wish we could see each other more, but it doesn't stop us from being close and talking to one another and keeping this community going.
We've had gatherings, you know, we've had gatherings here in my home. Mm-hmm. We've met at restaurants, and hopefully next month, when I hope you get to come.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
We're going to try and have another gathering. You know, people are longing for fellowship, mm-hmm. But they're longing for fellowship with people that understand what they believe, mm-hmm. and you feel like you can talk about it. You know, you feel like you can share what God's teaching you and showing you through His Word, and so people are really longing for that. And you know, if God's got me here to be able to open up my home to other people who want to come and share, great. I'm all for it. You know,
I'd like to bring you out here to Western North Carolina too, to where people ride these mountains.
You know, I should have worn my Carolina t-shirt because I'm a huge Tar Heel fan.
Oh, now we're talking. You're a Tar Heel fan.
I'm a basketball Tar Heel fan. I'm not much on it, but Roy Williams was my, oh man, he was my, He was my favorite coach in the world.
You know, it's really funny. Roy Williams only, you know, his home's only 20 minutes from where I live. And his, you know, in Black Mountain area. And then also, yeah, he grew up around here. As a matter of fact, there's a little greenhouse over here that he comes and used to frequent all the time. Yeah. And he's a, very, it's very localized here. But of course, he was in Kansas for a long time and then he came back. And
well, I kind of followed him. You know, I don't follow basketball players. I usually follow the coaches. So I kind of followed him from Kansas to North Carolina way back in the day. And but oh yeah, I'm a huge Tar Heel fan.
So yeah.
If you got any connections,
you got some connections. I can get, if you want to go. Now, I used to be a Duke fan a long time ago, and then I quit. I have, that's a long story, but I became a Tar Heel fan from there on out.
Yeah.
And but I love their basketball program. I have football. This whole thing with, anyway, we won't talk about that. But Shan, it's been such a joy for me to actually get to see you and talk to you, and thank you for sharing your testimony. And yes,
you are,
I hope.
So sweet.
I hope to see you in January or in the beginning of the year. I hope to come out and see you then. And are you going to try to make the trip out to the conference this year?
I am.
Well, the tickets are on sale. I don't even know that. They've went on sale. If you haven't got your tickets, you better get them. I think they said there's been 40 or 50 have already sold. So over 50% of them are gone.
Oh, yeah. And hotels. I mean, be sure and get the hotel. And the Arkansas Eschatology Conference in August. So,
that's right.
Hopefully. Oh, good. Good. Mm-hmm. So I know at least three times this year that I'm going to get to see you.
Yeah, same here. I can't wait. I'm excited.
Me too.
Well, Stan, you've been a blessing. Thank you so much for being on the Burrows. It means a lot to me.
Oh, thank you, Rick, for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, guys, appreciate you being here and listening. And we'll talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Bria. Peace out.